Hi, everybody. This is the Microsoft BizSpark show, and I'm your host, Doug Kretz. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what the BizSpark program is. It's a software for startups program. We offer $15,000 worth of startup software for development of your app just by being a member, as long as you're making, I guess, less than $1 million a year and you're less than 5 years old and you don't have any felonies or larceny charges against you. And today we're talking with a really interesting and dynamic woman, a mother, a founder, a doula, I believe you are used to be a doula, Denise Terry. She's the CEO of Pregnancy Companion. It's an app that's currently in the Android marketplace and on the iTunes App Store. We're going to get into what I think is probably one of the hottest areas in startup development, life sciences, health, and motherhood, actually. And we're going to talk to you about your app. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You were a graduate of Smith, and for a while you worked in business development in Asia, and you were also in the tech sector working for AT&T and also Microsoft at some point.
That's right.
At what point did you catch the startup bug? Or why don't you take us through that little history and show us how you got here?
So I actually caught the startup bug early in my career. Was at AT&T Wireless International, traveling mostly in Asia for the first couple years out of school, and came down here actually for a weekend with some friends and met some folks doing some interesting things at startups, including Tony Hsieh, who at the time was just getting started with Link Exchange, which at the time was web advertising network for small website owners.
As you said, it was the era of GeoCities and all those things.
GeoCities.
Like the very early days of the web, basically.
Early days of the web, early days of banner advertising. Mm-hmm. And Tony basically spent the whole weekend recruiting me for Link Exchange.
No kidding.
Yeah, and was trying to convince me to move down from Seattle, where I was living at the time. And just, you know, was here. It was my first time in San Francisco. I'd never been in the Bay Area before. And I just felt the vibe, you know, like that sort of startup vibe. And a lot of young people, really, really smart people, doing amazing things and building amazing products.
Right.
So I sort of said yes and jumped.
Yeah.
I literally moved down here, like, within a few weeks. Left my very nice job at AT&T Wireless and my nice salary and, you know, stability and all that. And decided to take a risk on Link Exchange and was the product manager there.
Would you recommend that for anybody who was probably at the same age? I'm assuming this is in your mid-20s or?
Early 20s.
Is it wise to just jump in? I mean, is Silicon Valley basically still the same place where you could just jump in and get started, something started, or have things changed a bit?
I think it's a different valley now than it was, you know, this was like 15 years ago. But I would say, I mean, if you're young and you know you've got, you're passionate and you've got energy and you've got, you can afford to do it, you know, it's not for everybody. But I think I would advise people to go for it, especially when you are young. And I mean, I kind of had this opportunity to either go and do a startup or maybe go to business school, which was sort of the traditional path at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Work for a couple of years, then you go to business school.
Yeah.
That's what kind of my parents were pushing me towards that.
Yeah.
But I decided I learn best by doing.
Yeah.
That's just my personality.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go and cut my chops at a startup and do some interesting things. And I learned a ton while at Link Exchange. I did product, sales, business development.
Right.
And then we got bought by Microsoft shortly after I joined. So that was quite a ride.
So it all works out pretty well. I assume it's not really the same valley because maybe it's not as easy to get a whole bunch of funding for something unless something that you're building is actually really legitimate and very purposeful and actually fixes a problem.
Sure.
Right? Would you say that's true?
I would say that's true. That's more true now than it was back in the, kind of the bubble days, you know, of the Web 1.0.
Right.
But that's good. I mean, I think it's a lot less expensive now to build a startup and build a product, you know, lean startup way. It's great that there's methodologies now that the first-time entrepreneur can really follow, so they don't have to make the same mistakes we did, you know, 15, 20 years ago, right? So they're learning from veterans who've done it a lot, which is great. So there's this whole ecosystem now that's been built around Silicon Valley where many people have built multiple companies and had multiple successes, and they're now mentoring the next generation. We didn't have that back then. It was literally, you know, ground zero for startup land.
So we're going to get into this this next generation because I think you're coming from a really interesting place. When we've talked earlier, the Pregnancy Companion app that you're CEO of now is really focused on the mother market.
Yes.
Right? I mean, literally motherhood,
motherhood.
From conception to birth. we're going to get into like sort of that market, I guess, and also that sort of community. But let's talk a little bit about the app. Mm-hmm. So what does it do, basically, mm-hmm. for the mothers out there who might need something?
Sure.
Like
so
that.
Pregnancy Companion is a comprehensive mobile app on iOS and Android.
Yeah.
And it's basically a mobile guide to pregnancy, written and created by OBGYN. So
right.
actually, my two co-founders are two board-certified OBs here in Silicon Valley.
Okay.
They specialize in fertility and high-risk pregnancy and delivered thousands of babies through
yeah.
their career. And what they were finding as doctors in their own practice is that with the advent of the internet and social media and forums, mothers these days have so much information available to them online.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming. And pregnancy is, especially for first-time moms, it's a time of great change and uncertainty. You really don't know what's going to happen
mm-hmm.
Throughout your pregnancy until you experience it
yeah.
firsthand. So mothers have a lot of questions throughout the 9 months of pregnancy. They often ask their OB, they want information, that's mobile, that they can have in the palm of their hand.
And not to be critical of doctors, but really the health experience now and the medical experience now with doctors, it's not very, I don't want to say that it's not good, but time that doctors have to spend for each individual patient is limited.
That's right. And that's a challenge.
So how does this address this? I mean, how do you think that this, what is this really doing in terms of helping people get that information?
So it's helping mothers, we have hundreds of questions throughout the pregnancy, and it's not just during that 8 to 10 minute OB visit.
Yeah.
The average woman sees her OB maybe 10 to 12 times throughout the pregnancy, but there's weeks that go by in between where there's a lot happening physically,
yeah.
emotionally, that she has questions about or just concerns that might come up. So
yeah.
It's not always easy to get access to that the information
yeah.
In a trusted way. So,
is this like a Quora then for pregnant women?
There's an aspect of that.
Yeah.
In the apps.
It doesn't work quite like Quora with the machine language and all that kind of stuff, I'm assuming,
not
right
yet.
Now. I took a look at it. It's being iterated, basically. And that's why you're here. So why don't we go back to that for a second?
Sure.
Your journey is very interesting, and we can get into more of the details of the past, but you were pretty active in the startup world. You took a break, and then you were doing what was called being a doula. You were helping women birth, right? And now you're in this position where, in a way, you're kind of acting as doula for Pregnancy Companion, right? Because what's happened is OBGYNs, from what I understand, didn't quite have the technical skill or the business skill to kind of how do you take an app and then broaden it out for a market and actually sell and distribute it. And so that's what you're doing. So
sure.
could you maybe for this, I want to bring this up because I think this is also an avenue for people in the startup world. It's not necessary that you have to come in, build an app, and then scale it massively, and then suddenly you have a company. You're taking a different approach. So how did you get into this?
So it's interesting. I did have that experience. So I was doing startups after Link Exchange, Microsoft, a number of various startups, and
mm-hmm.
Came to a point in my own life where I sort of had a realization that I wanted to be of service
mm-hmm.
in some bigger way.
Right.
That didn't necessarily entail being at a startup or building a technology product. So through my own journey, I took a sabbatical. I kind of organically got involved in the wellness industry
mm-hmm.
And created my own business that eventually ended up serving mostly moms,
mm-hmm.
pregnant and new mothers. And through that process became a birth doula, which is, for those people that don't know what that means, it's basically a trained childbirth labor assistant.
Yeah.
It's not a medical role. It's not like a midwife or an OB. It's completely non-medical support for birthing
right.
women. So I did that for a few years, actually helped hundreds of babies and
yeah.
mothers, and met one of our doctors, Dr. Jan Ridfors, back at that time.
Okay.
So I've known him for over 10 years, and in the last 2 years, he and his practice partner developed this app.
Yeah.
Basically to solve a problem that they had in their own practice of mothers have lots of questions,
yeah.
they're clearly not getting that trusted information. How do we help them
yeah.
as OBGYNs get access to that even when they're not in a visit with us? So they created the app, it's been out for a few years.
Yeah.
It's gone completely viral within the mother community and within OBGYNs referring it to their
right.
patients. So
and then what you're doing, what kind of skills do you need to get recruited in the way that you did? I mean, what do you think these OBGYNs saw in you and your past performance that makes you a good CEO to kind of help iterate this app and then make a better business proposition out of
it? Sure. I think maybe in my case it was a combination of things. The fact that I've done several startups before, so
yeah.
Both on the consumer side, B2C and e-commerce side, as well as experience at some cloud and SaaS companies. So
yeah.
Having that both sides of the house, you know, we're building out a platform essentially
yeah.
with our products. And then just my own personal experience.
Yeah, that's
having
what I
been,
think. Yeah.
You know, kind of a mother myself, I have two young twins who Dr. Ridfors was my OB.
Yeah.
So I have twins myself. I have experience, you know, with startups related to parenting
yeah.
and motherhood. I actually ran marketing for Day One Center, which is a local Bay Area startup
right.
focused on parents.
Sure.
So just that combination of experience on the startup side, as well as my passion for parents and mothers,
yeah.
I think made a lot of sense.
Did you notice that something was kind of missing? Like, I imagine, and actually there's a question out here from AJ Smith who was asking, how do you ensure on the app that mothers get the right information? Is there some kind of filtering mechanism?
Sure.
Which I'm assuming is the doctors
themselves.
It's the
doctors, yeah. So just some background about them. So Dr. Ridfors, who's one of the two app creators, he is a professor of obstetrics at the Stanford Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote, co-authored the manual, the medical manual, called the Handbook on Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Infertility. It's called the
okay.
Red Book
yeah.
among OBGYNs, but it's basically the manual that they all train
so
with.
So how do you give birth
school.
To a baby, basically?
Yeah, so he trains the doctors that actually help all the birthing women,
yeah.
you know, in the United States.
Wow.
So he's kind of a medical, you know, author and authority on that subject, and also a well-recognized specialist in
sure.
infertility and high risk. So.
Okay, that answers that question. But so the broader question though is, it seemed like in the health category, you see a lot of these kinds of apps developing where
mm-hmm.
it's like, I mean, we talked about I've talked before about this app. You probably remember the name, where you can actually ask a doctor a specific question
mm-hmm.
and somebody
a doctor will answer you back.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So something clearly is missing, and I wonder. You mentioned earlier that. That mothers, this is really going viral with
mm-hmm.
mothers. What's pushing that adoption among mothers?
It's, you know, there's a statistic that says that as soon as a woman learns she's pregnant, her internet usage doubles.
Really?
She's just literally, she goes into motherhood drive takes over, and that maternal instinct for, oh my gosh, this is probably one of the most important jobs
yeah.
that I'm ever going to have in my life,
yeah.
and I need to prepare. Right,
yeah.
And there's no manual for it, so I'm gonna self-teach. Right, I'm gonna go find information on the internet. I'm gonna download some apps. I'm gonna just be voracious about my information intake about what does it mean to be a mom, what's coming down the road, and also what is pregnancy all about? Because I'm experiencing all these changes, and I don't know what's normal or what's not normal. So it's just that, you know, desire for more education.
And I find that there's also, you see a lot of these polls and these this analysis out on the web as well that says that women are better at sharing on the internet than men are. And I don't always buy into these kinds of, like, very gender-specific
mm-hmm.
Perceptions about attitude or how things happen. But
sure.
you do find that this word-of-mouth thing is very strong in the motherhood community,
sure.
right?
Mm-hmm.
How does... Let's say I'm trying to build an app, and I want to build it for mothers. What do I have to do with an app to ensure that, in addition to having the filters with the right information, that mothers are actually going to adopt it and want to talk about it? Is
mm-hmm.
there anything, is there any kind of secret
well,
sauce to...
The secret sauce is to really understand your user and your customer,
yeah.
right? So almost, do some user research, sorry, and customer development, and
mm-hmm.
make sure you're actually going to be building something that somebody wants to use, that
mm-hmm.
you're solving a problem or addressing a real deep need that person or that woman, that mother has, that the world is not fulfilling for her,
right?
Right? So don't just build another Me Too app and make it more pretty and more gamified, right? Actually solve a problem. So for these mothers that we're reaching, the problem we solve is they have lots of questions,
yeah.
and it's not the easiest... it's not easy to get access instantly to an OBGYN. And even when you do, you have a few minutes.
Yeah.
Right? So just making sure that they're aware of everything that's going on in their pregnancy and providing that information proactively.
Mm-hmm. AJ said that he dropped off, but he says that you talked to the doctors themselves.
Yeah. We did. I mean, the doctors solved their own problem.
So let's go back to that. They... they saw a problem in their own practice that they weren't able to get enough information to the mothers at the right time, or the right type of information.
Sure.
So this sort of offloads a little bit of that labor intensive, no pun intended, labor work that goes into informing your audience, I guess, so to speak, to borrow a metaphor. It goes viral. Mothers are using it. Do you know at what scale mothers are using it now? Like how many users
do you
actually
have? So we've had over 200,000 mothers cycle through the app for, you know, throughout the last couple years.
Yeah.
And so right now it's being distributed through OBGYN practices. It's available on the App Store. You can search for it. But we haven't actually, until I came on board, we haven't had any marketing expert to focus on user acquisition or paid advertising. So it's largely been through word of mouth.
But some of your user research, though, has showed you that it's not just information on obstetrics that you need to be offering to your audience. There's other things, right?
There's other things they want. Yeah, it's basically the whole journey towards becoming a mother, whether you've decided you want to be a parent and you're trying to conceive, or maybe you bump up against some issues and you're now going through infertility.
Yeah.
A lot of questions there. And then pregnancy is where we see a huge spike in engagement and the questions multiply.
So let's not dive too much into the weeds anymore about the actual particular app. Let's talk about the broader issues, because I feel like health sciences is a sector that hopefully can really solve a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even looking at California in particular, health costs have traditionally been very high. There have been problems with women getting access to the right kinds of care. Are you kind of trying to take this app in a direction of solving some of these very critical, what I think are infrastructure problems, community problems, social problems? I mean, where do you see apps like yours fitting into the actual overall health and sciences picture?
Sure. So I think what we do first and foremost is educate and empower women with information that they need to be kind of stewards of their own health journey, right?
Yeah.
Through motherhood, that's a very specific time frame that we're focused on. But we believe that when we empower the mother with information, she is then the best advocate for her own health care and her own medical care. Right, so she's kind of in charge. The buck stops with her.
Really?
You know, the OB is there to assist her along the journey, as you know, with medical advice and if interventions are needed, to be there as her physician. But ultimately we feel like, okay, the mother knows what's going on with her, you know, in her body and her baby. And so if the more empowered we make her through our app and the tools that we're providing for her to track her own health, whether that's her weight gain or is she taking those 10 glasses of water a day.
Yeah.
She's in charge of that. We can't force that on a mom, but if she knows why that's important and why that produces a healthy baby and reduces her risks for various things like early labor, then she's able to comply.
Is there any kind of economic benefit, you think, to this, to informing mothers of more of that information or giving more of that information to mothers? What do you think?
We do, actually. So one thing that's not very well known is that in the U.S. alone, about $110 billion is spent on maternal health care related to labor and pregnancy, labor, and delivery.
What are those costs? I mean, what do you mean? So
delivery
in the hospital?
In the hospital, you know, basically all the prenatal care leading up to the birth experience, the birth itself, you know, whether the mother has a C-section or not can drastically increase the cost of her delivery. Whether she has preterm labor or not can drastically increase the cost. So $30 billion in the U.S. every year is related to preterm delivery costs.
Yeah.
That's mother's, you know, birth and delivery, as well as the baby being born too early and the care of that baby in the NICU as a result of of being born too soon.
There's sort of an advocacy element to this then, because one can easily assume that if a woman is off the work grid having a baby, that there's no sort of economic productivity to that.
Sure.
But in a way, there's sort of like a negative productivity when she doesn't give enough information. So if she's not, I'm assuming that what you're saying is, if a woman isn't given enough nutritional information or medical information to care for the fetus or whatever and the lead up to these expensive hospital costs, those costs may, I don't know what the figure might be, but maybe they'll double or they'll triple.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just as if she's still a part of the workforce. It's the same, it makes me think of the same sort of like worker productivity issues of when you don't have healthy employees who are showing up to work, the knock-on effect down the line is that health costs are exorbitant.
Sure.
Right? And it's a drain on the actual overall.
Sure. Absolutely.
So thinking big picture here, you're hoping, I guess, to save costs in the total sort of economic picture.
Win-win, we save costs, and yeah. we also produce healthier outcomes. Healthy mothers deliver healthy babies, make healthy humans.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're starting with the very beginnings of life, conception
yeah.
and gestation and that birth experience. A mother is more likely to return back to work after her maternity leave if she's had a healthy baby delivered and,
yeah.
and a positive, you know, birth experience for herself, right?
I
if she's
it.
Had any kind of complications, you know, to her own body or to the baby, maybe the baby's had health issues or is preterm
yeah.
or preemie, she's less likely to return to
right.
her job if that was her intention.
Yeah. See, I'm really, and Corey, you might want to be able to, can you, is there any way to boost the volume? Because some people are saying that it's a little low. It's you can hear it, but... I think that so two questions ran through my mind when you were talking about that. And one is, like, is it easy to convince an investor, or do you know if investors hear that kind of talk and can understand that what sounds like to be kind of an indirect benefit of funding some kind of production like this? I mean, is it
someone has to pay ultimately,
yeah,
right? In order
I mean,
for our company to be worth a lot of money and for us to raise capital.
Mm-hmm.
For future outcome, there needs to be sort of someone's going to pay, whether
yeah.
it's the consumer pays or a doctor pays
yeah.
or the insurance provider.
But I guess what I'm wondering is if you feel like whether you've had these direct conversations with investors or not, is investor attitude right now focused on more of these more critical social life problems, or do you think they're still sort of focused on what's a hot app? Like, is there going to be another, you know, Grindr
really,
or Foursquare or something like that?
You know? It really depends on the investor
yeah.
and what their intentions are and what their, you know, what their criteria for investment
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, is. So we're not for every investor. You
right.
know, we're looking for the right set of investors who really believe in what we're building.
Sure.
And beyond the apps, we're building a whole platform
right.
of, you know, mother-centric healthcare
yeah.
that we believe will better engage patients and better engage doctors in the delivery of great care.
Got it. So I hate to pigeonhole mothers or women as a group as a whole into a market category, but is there anything interesting you can tell us about sort of mothers in general as consumers of health apps or consumers of anything that's like sort of technologically focused?
I think mothers, I would say in general, you know, have limited time. So time is probably their number one asset. You know,
mm-hmm.
every mother I know has little time and is running after multiple kids and doesn't have a ton of time to, you know,
mm-hmm.
onboard to your product. So you need to make your product amazingly fast and simple and easy
yeah.
to use and understand and really provide value to her life, whether you're saving her money or saving her time
yeah.
or solving a real problem that she's experiencing.
Are they very, have you found that you're, in your user research, have they been very forthcoming in sort of their feedback, or
Absolutely.
Is it, or do you have to like go hunt them down?
You
and
don't
figure
have
out?
To coax, you know, coax anything out.
That's
of them
what I'm wondering.
You know, they're, I'd say for the most part, happy to be vocal about their opinion
yeah.
about you, tell you exactly what is working, what is not working for them.
Got it.
That, at least the users that we've interviewed.
Yeah.
Which is great because they'll tell you directly what they like or don't like.
So what other areas of the life cycle then are you interested in building into the app? We were talking earlier about how you're here to iterate that.
Sure. So
where do you go
so
from here?
Well, we see basically the next version of Pregnancy Companion containing better tools
mm-hmm.
That help the mother get through a healthy pregnancy with more active engagement and reminders for various things. Drink your water, take your prenatals, and so forth. We also see ourselves, you know, providing a whole suite of apps beyond pregnancy, right? Because these phases that we talked about, fertility, conception,
yeah.
and postpartum breastfeeding, basically every stage of a mother's journey through motherhood, she needs help of some sort, whether it's for her own health or
mm-hmm.
for the health of her baby. So pediatrics is another area
yeah.
that we're launching soon.
And is this, you know, we're clearly heading into a direction where, you know, we have the Internet of Things,
mm-hmm.
we've got biometric devices.
Connected devices.
I'm sure you're thinking ahead to that kind of stuff about, I mean, what I love about, I mean, I'm sure, I've not ever been with anyone who's had a baby. I've never been in a relationship with anyone who had a baby except for my mom. And then we didn't have mobile devices back when I was born. But I imagine that going forward, the strength of sort of motherhood connection with other mothers, the community of voices that sort of articulated in that community, the kind of like the ability for all these people to really give a lot of feedback. They kind of, you know, you say this thing spreads virally. I can see like Pregnancy Companion being a first step into a whole network of devices,
mm-hmm.
biometric stuff and whatnot. I mean, could an app like yours kind of become its own life sciences company or health sciences company?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at, we don't intend to create our own devices, but there are whole companies out there that we seek to partner with, who would be part of our ecosystem and platform, where a pregnant mom wearing a Fitbit has specific pregnancy-related data and information that is really only relevant if you understand the mechanics and kind of medical health model of what does it mean to be a healthy pregnant woman?
Right.
What's the normal heart rate range for a pregnant woman? When does it go off charts? Is it dangerous? Right.
Yeah.
So that type of value-added information and layering on top of those devices, we think we can add a lot of value there.
Your app aside, though, that kind of takes us into, I mean, my mind at least is going into these kind of sci-fi scenarios where devices and technology really knows a lot about us.
Sure.
Probably much more than we've even shared with our doctors.
The quantified self, yeah.
Right, the quantified self. Is that an easy thing to push in the U.S. environment? I mean, with the regulation the way it is, I don't know, government scrutiny of like sciences and medicine and whatnot, can you iterate something fast enough in this kind of environment, or is this maybe not something that could happen in the U.S.?
I think consumers in the U.S. are really savvy technologically.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the ones that are driving a lot of the quantified self, you know, devices and movements and tracking things on their iPhone and various things. So we feel like we could just be leveraging that, you know, as a value-added layer on top of that. So we know that our pregnant moms are already using these devices to track themselves. But, you know, those devices don't necessarily have the information about what's normal for a pregnant mom versus a non-pregnant other mom.
Right. So for anyone out there, we weren't able today to hook up a way to see the app live, but for anyone who wants to check it out, it's pregnancycompanionapp.com, right? Mm-hmm. And you can find it in the Android store and the iTunes store.
Absolutely.
All right. So a few other questions, because I kind of like talking to people who have been very successful either founding their own things. You've done a lot of really great stuff in this space since the 90s. For people out there, we have a huge audience of bootstrapped founders, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're using the software that we give them free of charge to kind of really build it from the ground up. Is there a sort of set of parameters that founders should be focused on as they're just getting ready to get started and they're really trying to build something? A lot of these people, a lot of founders I've talked to, you know, they're also working other jobs, right?
Sure.
It's not like they're just sitting there all day engineering a product.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they don't have investors or anything to give them the time to do that. What do you think, from going back to your younger self to now, like, what is it that you wish you knew and what would be useful to know now?
Well, I mean, now, again, the cost of building a startup and a product now is so much less than it was even 10 years ago. Our co-founders bootstrapped Pregnancy Companion for 2 years.
Yeah.
They are full-time OBGYNs delivering
They're
babies.
Doctors. They're not technology
They're doctors
people.
Doctors delivering babies every day, like this morning, you know.
Yeah.
So they did this, again, as a result of a real problem that they identified, as a result of their own experience as doctors with patients who tell them all the time, I need this, I need that, I have these questions, I'm not finding a solution to my problem. So they started with a problem that they felt that they could uniquely solve, and then they validated that problem and that sort of their product idea with their own patient base.
Yeah.
Right. So I think getting really close to those end users, whoever you think your end users are, and making sure that you're developing something before you ever write any line of code or even put up a website, that you're going to be building something that people want and need.
And you think it makes sense to, I mean, it sounds like these doctors kind of focused on the things that they knew.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the advice that Ezra Pound gave to writers, which is just write what you know.
Sure.
Right? Or as William Carlos Williams. It was one of the two modernist poets. I mean, it's basically don't go off and just try to make the next great thing just because you think it's hot.
I would agree with that. I would say I think some of the best startups out there came from a real authentic place of identifying a problem that was very close, you know, to the founder, a problem that they felt that they could uniquely solve in the world. You know, like, why you? Why this startup? Why this problem? Answer that for yourself, because you need to get up every day, day after day, and bootstrap yourself and, like, you know, invest your own time and money back into your idea, this idea that's going to be birthed into the world. And you have to be passionate about it. Because if you're not, and you're just trying to build, like, the next Instagram that gets acquired, I mean, you're not going to succeed.
No. Well, how did you know that you were a problem solver? Because it sounds like you need to first have a set of skills, like being able to read between the lines, being able to actually think for someone else and say, oh, this is what they're trying to do. Was there a moment, is it does it go back to the doula days, or
for me it does. Yeah. I mean, it's maybe before that, but I think part of my personal and professional journey was spending those, you know, 2 or 3 years that I spent literally listening to every customer that I had in front of me. You know, just really developing that one-on-one understanding and relationship, and that comes from time and spending time with people and really listening.
Yeah.
You know, not being the expert that's don't talk at your customers.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to them.
Yeah.
Right? And really find out what are their pain points? What is their journey like? You know, and how can you make the world a better place for them?
Yeah.
With what you're trying
to do.
How
do you make that listening efficient though? Because I you know, so it's a misquoted thing that Henry Ford said, if you gave people what they really wanted, we'd have, I don't know, what do you say, like, we'd have faster horses or something like that.
Sure.
Or I don't know what that quote is anymore. It's such a silly quote. But like, how do you make the listening efficient? So how do you know, I mean, this may
surveys
seem...
Surveys are a great way to scale listening, and right? Then, I mean, you're literally asking.
But how many do you
questions?
Have to do you think? How many things do you think you have to do? How many people do you think you have to talk to before you really know you've got the kernel of a good product?
I would say at least a few hundred of your target customer. Yeah. Not just random people. Like, you have to figure out who am I trying to help in the world?
Yeah.
Who am I trying to solve a problem for?
Yeah.
And then find those people at scale. You know, either online. You know, there's a lot of tools now through SurveyMonkey, and you know, you can kind of cobble together a lot of people online.
Is it effective to have a face-to-face interview though?
Absolutely. Well, for me it is. I mean, I think it is helpful because you're able to glean things from face-to-face interviews that you might not get from a survey. You can dig deeper into a question when you get an answer back that you didn't expect. You can sort of say, well, tell me about that.
Yeah.
What is that like for you?
Yeah.
So getting both a qualitative and a quantitative sense of who your customer is, I think, is important, because it's not just the numbers and what they answer on a survey, but it's also like, who is this person?
So in that sense, if you're not, like, let's say you're more technically minded and you're probably not, no one would really classify you as that subtle, nuanced listener. Should you partner with someone who can do that, or should you focus on other parts, or try to do something else?
I'd say get out of the building and get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what startups are all about, right? Take risks, like, stretch your boundaries, like, go talk to people.
Yeah.
Right? It's not that scary.
Yeah. Well, it's scary for me. I have to do it every Thursday, and I hate talking to people. No, I'm kidding. I actually like talking to people. So we've been talking to Denise Terry. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you. I wish we had more time, maybe a couple of hours, to kind of dig back deep into, like, your college days and your business development days and the work you did in Asia. But for those of you who found this to be interesting, you can always turn to us every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific. If you're interested in Denise's app, or you want to talk to Denise, can we give them your Twitter stuff?
Absolutely.
You can talk to her at Denise H. Terry. What's the H stand for?
Hunt of Arrows.
Is that your original name?
Yes.
You're from Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. Right. And they can also talk to you through at Startup Grind, because you also have joined that family. You've helped Derek a lot with, I guess, the Bay Area. Is it San Francisco?
Bay Area, and actually globally. We've scaled the global team. I used to run marketing.
Okay.
There,
so. Cool. So you can always turn to Startup Grind too. That's also a good resource, I have
to say.
If you want to hear what a founder really thinks about something, or an investor really thinks about something, you should go check out some of those things. I think they're like once a month.
A month in over 60 cities around the world, and growing really quickly.
Awesome. And you can always turn to the BizSpark show, and BizSpark, Microsoft.com/BizSpark or BizSpark.com. You can follow us at BizSpark on Twitter. And please join our Facebook group, too. It's facebook.com/BizSpark. You can have these types of conversations every day. Denise herself has had those conversations. She's recently left comments. I was very tickled to see that. Someone actually reads the... We have almost 50,000 people in that Facebook group.
That's great.
And we started with not 50,000. So thank you, Denise, for coming by.
Thank you, Douglas. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you, always. All right. Bye.